Welcome to episode 45 of the Rockin' Interviews podcast. I'm your host, Shannon Wilk, and today I'm joined by...
Mark Evans. I'm the lead singer in Heaven's Edge, Frontiers Records, now recording artist Heaven's Edge, from Philadelphia. I'm 61, getting old, but we still get to do this.
Hell yeah. So
can't be happier about that.
And you certainly don't let it stop you on stage. That's for damn sure.
No, it just stops me the next morning when I wake up and go.
Heaven's Edge releasing your first album in a little over 2 decades. So I guess my question is, why now? What made you want to do this album now instead of, you know, in the past 20 years or so?
Well, to be honest, we really, until 2012, we weren't a band since, I mean, I left the band in, I guess, 92, something like that. And I think we did a couple of like little benefits where we do a handful of songs or something, but we really weren't a band. And then in 2012, we were asked to get together to do a festival in England called Firefest. And we got back together again. We didn't even know if we were going to sound any good or, you know, still be able to do it. But we also didn't know what reality was going to be, because we had all just kind of moved on with our lives.
Right.
And once we started seeing the reaction, and then once it became known that we were a band again and that we were playing again, we started getting more and more offers for different shows and festivals. And but even the album thing was still nothing. Reggie and I have continued to write over the years. Reggie and I always kept in touch, and we had continued writing, but not at the pace that you would to put a record out.
Right.
So, you know, we had new songs. We'd do an occasional new song on some of the shows we were doing, but we were never thinking about an album. And then we got a message from Frontiers that they were interested in working with us. And it was actually kind of funny. We did a Zoom call like this with one of the gentlemen from Frontiers over in Italy. And, you know, just, you know, talking to him, he's like, well, this is what we're interested in. We'd like to put together a 3-record deal for you guys. And I was like, three? He's doing 3 records. I'm like, you know, we're old, right? He's like, no, I think we'll be fine. But that kind of put things, you know, sped that whole process up and really put it in the forefront of our minds. Like, you know, first off, can we? We didn't even know. Because the second record that came out, and I think it was like 98, was really, it was a bunch of demos and the pre-production demos that we had done when we left Columbia Records after the first record. We signed with Capitol.
Yeah.
And started recording the next record, and then things kind of got put on hold. So the Some Other Place, Some Other Time record was really just kind of a compilation of miscellaneous stuff that we had done since the first record came out. So this is really the first full one that we were about, you know, taking it right from, you know, right from square one and starting with the writing and the recording, because most of the songs are all newer. Only what could have been the song that we just put out, like I guess 2 weeks ago, Reggie and I had written the original version of that probably about 12 years ago. And then when we started this record, we always loved the song, but we knew it was good, but it was missing something. And we had hooked up with a guy by the name of, very talented guy by the name of Jacob Bunton. And so we worked with him, and he had a couple of ideas to tweak this and tweak that in the song. And it, for us, it made all the difference in the world. We were like, there we go. That's what it was missing.
For sure. And,
But a lot of the rest of the record is stuff that we've written over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I think, to your point, I think a good producer can make or break a record.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's strange because, you know, as a musician, especially, you know, if you're a musician, you're a songwriter, and you've done this and everything, you can convince yourself that, no, we don't need a producer. We know what the hell we're doing, until a producer comes in and just does these little things. Same as when we did the first record and we first met with Neil Kernan, besides it being a little intimidating because of the resume he had, it was still somebody else that was going to come in and start telling Reggie and I what they thought of our songs and how they thought to make them better or something like that, which, you know, your songs, you take it a little bit personally.
Yeah.
But then you kind of get used to it. And once you realize what that other voice can do, that other opinion can do, it makes, it can make, if the chemistry's right, the what can come out of it is huge. And we had, we ended up with really, really good, strong chemistry with Neil Kernan. And then we had the opportunity to work with Jacob. Reggie and I both said, I mean, Reggie and I write the, you know, the bulk of what Heaven's Edge plays. And him and I, when we first met, the reason we put the band together, we were both in very locally successful bands. But the two of us got together to write, and it just clicked. And in all these years, what's it been, probably 36 years since we started the band, 37 years, something like that. We've never felt that connection or that chemistry with anybody that we've ever tried to work with like that. And Jacob came in. We had never met the guy. The bulk of our interaction was over the phone or over email. And it just, he was, he fit in with Reggie and I, just like Reggie and I fit with each other. So working with him was great.
Yeah.
You like the guy, you've got a chemistry with him, you respect him, and you trust what his, you know, what he's trying to get out of you.
Right. And having an outside person helps too, because they're not as like attached to the song, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because the, and there are sometimes it's, you know, we'll come in and say something, you're like, wait, but that's the most important part of the song. No, it's not.
Yeah. For sure.
And, but yeah, we, with Jacob, we really didn't run up against anything that he suggested that we were like, nah, I don't like that. You know, I mean, everything, because it wasn't major things he was suggesting.
Right.
You know, there were a couple of the songs that lyrically, I wasn't thrilled with everything that I had put in there.
Right.
And then Jacob, just being Jacob, I'm like, Jacob, you know, I like a lot of what's here, but I think there's a few lines that could do that. And, you know, he'd get back and go, oh, well, I changed this to this and this to that. And I'd be like, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah. You know, that was great.
And he was just that added piece for Reggie and I, and that added, you know, a different sounding board. And then working with him in the studio, he worked with me and produced the vocals record. And it was great working with the guy, you know, and getting to know him.
Yeah, for sure.
Just so talented, so nice. Can't wait to start working with him on the next one.
Awesome. So something I noticed, like, there's not much information about. What was kind of the reason that you guys split to begin with?
Well, really, I, like I said, I had left the band. And it was really because we, music was changing, obviously, you know, the way it affected many bands that were like us. And we were all still like, no, this is what we want to do for a living. This is, you know, still, you know, we still have these opportunities. We've got to make this work. And so Reggie and I, as a last ditch effort, tried writing things that were a little bit more modern, current, whatever you'd want to call it, a little bit more grungy. And it just wasn't us. I mean, it just, it just, and it started kind of feeling like desperate. I mean, the industry that we were in, that with our genre of music, was just, it was dying so quickly. And, you know, I finally, I remember we did a show up in, it was in New England. It may have been Boston or somewhere up around Boston. And it was the last show of that leg of the little tour that we were doing up there. And I just kind of knew during that last trek that I was done. I'm like, it's, you know, I can't change. I can't go that direction. It's just not me. It would be fake. And so on the ride home, we were driving back from up in New England, and I just told the guys, I said, I'm done. I can't. And I mean, I had, you know, I already had two kids at home, and, you know, doing all this stuff, I was missing time with them and missing time with my wife. And just trying, you know, I came to the realization that the end was near, and I may as well start trying to start a new beginning sooner than later.
Yeah.
Because of the responsibilities I had. And it worked out. I mean, actually, the song What Could Have Been, if you listen to the lyrics of it, it's written because all those years later, Reggie or I would, you know, we'll talk about the fact that we'd run into different people and like, oh my God, you guys should have been huge. You should have been this, you should have been that. Mm-hmm. And which is great. We love the fact that people were that passionate about the band and liked the band and believed in the band like that, like we did.
Yeah.
But What Could Have Been was written because of the people that thought, you know, hey man, you know, they'd come up thinking like we were sad that it didn't work out the way that we had hoped back then.
Yeah.
But in reality, it worked out the way that it was supposed to, because all of us now, everyone in the band, well, I mean, Jaron's now the younger guy in the band. He does not have children now. But all of us and you know, Gigi, rest in peace when he was still with us, we were all married. We had kids. We had jobs. We own homes. Our lives were moving forward. And then we came back into this. We get to, you know, step out for a weekend or go on the cruise right. For a week and feel that again, mm-hmm. but then come back to a safe place and come back to our homes.
Right.
And feel grounded. Whereas, you know, we see a lot of the other bands that we're playing these festivals with and, you know, watching a bunch of 60-year-old guys hop into the back of a van like they're 21. I'm just like, I mean, God bless them to still have that drive to do it, but mm-hmm. I still have the drive to play. I absolutely love being up on stage with these guys and playing in front of everybody. I mean, that's why I can't stop smiling when I'm up there.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine doing it, you know, first off, physically doing that every night. And, you know, and secondly, just also physically, I mean, that kind of traveling when it's not.
Right.
You know, just kind of, you get a little old for it. It's, you know, not something that you can just easily get used to.
But yeah, for sure.
Back and doing this now, but What Could Have Been was written just saying, no, it turned out right. You know what I mean? Like if we were that successful back then, we wouldn't have very probably all of the children that we all have, because mm-hmm. we would have missed that opportunity being on tour. Right. You know, who knows if marriages would have lasted or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the end, yeah, what, you know, it could have been a What Could Have Been, but we wouldn't want our current lives. We wouldn't trade them for anything. So we wouldn't want our current lives to become what could have been.
Yeah, for sure. I mean? Mm-hmm. So what kind of led up to you guys getting back together? Was it kind of like this, I guess, like a lot of the 80s bands kind of got back together around the same time. So what, mm-hmm. what was the missing piece for you guys?
Actually, somebody to push us. And that came from a guy by the name of Kieran Dargan.
Mm-hmm.
He's from Ireland, but he was the promoter that ran Firefest for, I guess it was 10 or 11 years in Nottingham, England.
Mm-hmm.
And he's actually responsible for getting a lot of bands like us back together again.
Mm-hmm.
Because he loves melodic rock. Over in Europe, they treat melodic rock and music like they're like Trekkies or, you know, the Comic-Con kind of people. They're just so into. But he did a lot on getting bands that were at our level, you know, that low tier of, while we were so close to almost becoming almost kind of like somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But he finally messaged me on Facebook a bunch of times. And I kept on not blowing them off, but just saying, Kieran, I mean, I can talk to the guys, but we're not even a band. Like,
right.
Not even a band. There's a few of the guys I haven't talked to in years.
Right.
He finally convinced me to give him my phone number. And he said, I'm going to call you and explain to you what it is we're doing here. And then you can give me your answer. So he called me up and he was very persuasive. And so I agreed to contact the other members of the band. And that if they were into it, we'd get together and rehearse and run through some of the stuff. And if it sounded okay and we felt good about it, that we would agree to do Firefest. So I called them. Everybody was into it. We got together and rehearsed and it felt great. And then we had things set up to go and play in England. A few days after England, I went and did an acoustic show in Athens, Greece. And We came back here to the States and played our first hometown show in Philadelphia in, I don't know, 30 years. And it was just incredible. And from there, things just kept on building, you know. But that was the catalyst. I can honestly say if Kieran was not such a pest, and I mean that in the most gracious way, we may not have ever gotten back together again. I mean, like I said, Reggie and I had actually put together another band called Ever After. And in fact, the original version of what could have been was done by Ever After. It was Reggie and myself and a drummer by the name of Jim Dernick, who was used to be in Cinderella for a little bit. And a guitar player by the name of John Dennis that I had played with in other bands. And we put an original band together for, you know, a couple of years, but it didn't, you know, things didn't really work out with that. But what could have been was actually originally done by them. And it was a different version.
So you said that you and Reggie kind of never stopped writing together, but what was it like to kind of get in the studio with the whole group of the band again after so long?
Honestly, it was one of my favorite things because one of the things that we used to do back when, you know, back when we were still trying to get signed and doing all that, is Reggie and I wrote on a schedule. We were very regimented with it. You know, these are the nights that we rehearsed. These are the nights that we wrote. And so typically most weeks we would come in with a new song to give the other guys in the band to start learning almost every week. And then we'd get together the following week, they'd learn the song and we'd start running through it and everybody could add their little, you know, way that they wanted to do things. And then, you know, we'd look to play it live and see if it worked or not. Doing it this time was writing an entire album without playing it live, which is what we got to do a lot back before we did the first record. And so the demos are, in most cases, just Reggie and I, you know, programming drums and us playing and sing, you know, me singing everything. So to get together with the band and finally hear a band play these songs when you're used to just hearing the demos was amazing because they add a different type of energy to it. Right. They all add their own little flavor to it. It was the first time ever playing new material with Jaron, with our bass player.
Right.
And just letting him go, you know, just say, ignore what's on the demo, play whatever you want to play, and we'll see how it goes. And everything he played, you know, sounded great.
Yeah, his bass on the album is ripping. I'm a bass player, so I appreciate that.
And it's funny, too, because I've been a bass player my whole life. It's what I did for a living before Heaven's Edge. I only didn't play bass in Heaven's Edge because we thought it would look funny not having a front man.
Yeah.
I told him, I said, from somebody that's been playing bass for almost 50 years, the stuff you played on the record was so well written, so well thought out, and so tasteful. Plus the bass sounds like freaking thunder on this thing. He did a phenomenal job. He really did.
Yeah. Even the opening track, I mean, it opens with straight up bass. Like, it's great.
Yeah, we were, when we first came up with that song, and it's funny because the reactions were kind of what we expected. We loved the song. We knew that the chorus, it had the big old 80s Heaven's Edge style chorus and everything, but we knew that the verses in the intro were a little bit heavier than what people were used to, or maybe a little more modern sounding.
Yeah.
But we also felt good because we're like, okay, it's still my voice on there. We still think the chorus has that Heaven's Edge thing, but we're just showing a little, you know, another side of us with the heaviness. And the bulk of the response was all great, but there were some people going, wow, look at these guys getting a little bit heavier. But
it's fun that way. Yeah, for sure. And I think, like, the whole album overall, like, I'm going to be honest, I've had it on repeat since I got it. Like, it's so awesome. Good. Thank you. But yeah, it's a lot more modern sounding for sure. And it's very clear that you guys have matured a lot, like songwriting wise and lyric wise. Like, it's just, it's completely different, but still has that classic, like, of course, it's you guys. It's going to sound like you guys, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it's actually lyrically, is one of the biggest challenges, or was one of the biggest challenges for me, because the lyrics that I wrote when I was in my 20s, and it was the 80s, and you know, it was just MTV and the crazy, you know, sex laden videos and all that stuff. You write lyrics a certain way,
right?
You know, you become a husband, you become a dad, you start thinking about things differently.
You go, oh God, my kids are going to hear this.
You know, it's funny. We played a show. I think it might've been the Trocadero. I don't know, maybe like 5-6 years ago. And we're up on stage and we're doing, you know, these songs. We're getting ready to do Skin to Skin, which as a 61-year-old man to sing, fire my rocket, you know, I'm about to explode. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm up on the stage getting ready to do this and thinking about the stuff that I've already sung about. And I'm like, and I even told the crowd, I said, this is hilarious. I said, because, you know, I'm older now and I'm looking out in the crowd. I'm seeing, you know, some of you are older, but on top of that, my 3 children are here, adult children, but they're all here. And my, at the time, she probably would have been, I don't know, 82-year-old mother. I'm up on stage singing songs about just like sex, drugs, and partying. Like, sorry. But you do have to approach lyrics a bit differently when, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of like, sure. if you've ever gone to see Kip Winger whenever he gets ready to do 17.
I was going
to
say that. Yeah, he was the last person I had on this podcast, actually. I guess, did you ever anticipate there would be another Heaven's Edge album until you got this offer? Was there ever like a thought in your mind that this would ever happen?
No, honestly, no. it surprised the hell out of us, and in a good way. It was a little, we were nervous about it because, like I said, you know, we've got to write this thing. And because there's, you know, our last record came out, or records came out, the internet didn't exist. Cell phones didn't exist.
Right.
Well, cell phones did exist. They were in big briefcases like this big. so much has changed. And the other thing that we've learned now that people can go online and just, you know, type away, and is that some people are, you know, they won't hold back. You know, they don't take the old, well, my mother told me if I've got nothing nice to say nothing at all. You know, people, they take this music very personally.
Yeah.
So people have an expectation. And if you don't meet it, they're going to tell you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
for sure.
Even when we've done, you know, we do shows and, you know, you'll see a review, especially if it's from Europe, you'll see reviews and they get so deep into what we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's amazing. But if they don't like what you're doing, they will tell you and they will not hold back at all. So it's a little nerve wracking to go, okay, we're going to put something out and we're going to just leave it. Once it's out there, we're completely open and vulnerable to anything they're going to say.
Yeah, that's true.
So now the first 2 songs are out and the response has been really, really, really good. So as of right now, we're thrilled. Hopefully, I'm glad you like the rest of the record. Some of the, you know, a few people I've talked to that have heard the whole record really seem to like it. So we're hoping that that continues, because that was our biggest goal. We wanted to enjoy doing the record, and I wanted to enjoy writing the record. I wanted to finish the record and be really proud of it and really excited about it, which we were. Both of those things worked out. And then after that, we wanted our fans to enjoy the record. And, you know, maybe pick up a few more, but we wanted the people that have been following us for all these years and wanting us to do something more, we wanted it to be worth the wait, same as we wanted it to be worth the wait for us. Mm-hmm. And so far, so good, but we still have another 8 songs that most people haven't heard. So we'll see what happens.
For sure. I think it'll be good.
Right.
So you mentioned you guys are on a 3-record deal. So, I mean, are you already on the next record? Is that already in the works? Or are you riding the wave of this one still?
You know, it's funny. Reggie and I had talked just a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked since then, but we were talking about just that. And we were trying to get back in the mode of writing, because another thing that's different now is we have jobs and,
right,
you know, a regular adult responsibilities and stuff. So the time to write is a lot more limited. Mm-hmm. Where you're trying, instead of going, let's say, hey, man, let's get together every Tuesday night and write. We don't have that.
Right.
So now it's more like, here, I have this idea. Do you have 5 minutes, you know, that you can, you know, FaceTime me or something and I can play this thing for you or you can play it for me? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the back and forth happens then. And then if I have an idea for the lyrics or for the melody, I've got a little bit of time when I get home that I might be able to jump in the studio, or a little bit of time after dinner. But then I have to get to bed. I gotta go to work the next day.
Right.
So we have started writing again, but we've also acknowledged the fact that we're still enjoying these songs getting out there and the videos getting out there. Mm-hmm. And the response from everybody is definitely distracting us from really getting hardcore in writing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This is twice in a lifetime thing for us, but mm-hmm. this is something that's so unexpected that we just want to enjoy it.
For sure. As you should.
It's almost like a game for us now to go on and check YouTube and go, 97,000 views. Guys, you know, I mean, to see how many views there are, because
yeah.
we don't expect as many as we're getting. I mean, we're not extreme and we're not winger, you know. We weren't at their level. And, you know, and funny enough, you know, us, them, you know, extreme, winger, LA,
everybody's releasing music right now.
Everybody's releasing music at the same time.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. I've been very busy doing all these reviews and interviews, and I'm like, I've had nothing the past 3 months, and now it's all at once.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's, and it was nothing. There was really no lead up to it. Like, I didn't know.
Right.
New Extreme had a record done because we're, you know, friends with their manager.
Right. So at the end of all my episodes, I like to do a fun segment called Turn It Up or Turn It Off, where I name an artist and you say if it comes on, if you'll turn it up or turn it off.
Okay.
All right. Slayer.
Off.
Janis Joplin.
Depends on the song.
Fair enough. Some
of them definitely turn it up.
T-Rex.
Turn it up.
Florida Georgia Line.
Not a big country guy, though. Them, I do. I mean, some of the bands like them, mm-hmm. you could easily just take that song and, I don't know, give it to us. We'll take one of your songs. Actually, you mentioned them. One of the things we were kidding around is you've now heard the whole record. So the next video that will be coming out, whenever it comes out, so we haven't just started it yet, that'll be soon, is for the song When the Lights Go Down.
Mm-hmm.
And when we finished that song, I'm listening to it going, well, I mean, I think people are going to like this because this probably would have been a really big hit back in the 80s.
Yeah.
I said, it also has a little bit of a country-ish thing to it. I said, if a band like Florida Georgia Line or somebody like that could do this song, it would probably be huge. So I do give them, I mean, they're a great band, great vocals and everything. It's just the country-ish part of it, you know, they kind of lose me on that. So
most
of it turned out.
And lastly, Lady Gaga.
Also, depending on the song, I think she's incredibly talented. And actually a damn good actress, because I thought that her in, now I'm drawing a blank. The sad movie.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't remember who was in it, though.
Oh, A Star Is Born? Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, she was amazing in that.
Mm-hmm.
She was great. So, yeah, depending on the song, a good amount of them I'd probably turn up.
Yeah, cool. So you want to let people know where they can buy the album?
The album is going to be available starting May 12th, pretty much everywhere. All your streaming services, anywhere that you normally buy music, whether it's on Amazon or wherever. But all streaming services will have it. Any of the videos will be up on YouTube, which already are the first two for Had Enough and What Could Have Been. And When the Lights Go Down, when that comes out, that will also be on YouTube. But other than that, any streaming service anywhere in the world, from what I understand, Frontiers is good with that stuff. So anywhere you normally get your music, you will be able to get Heaven's Edge, Get It Right. And we hope you enjoy it.
Hell yeah. Well, is there anything else you'd like to include?
I don't know.
All right.
No, that's probably it.
Well, thank you so much for your time. It was great talking to you today.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode of the Rockin' Interviews podcast. Stay tuned for the next episode.